Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 3rd of March, 3-3, Anno Domini 2018, and you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, on this not yet melted Saturday, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off the shoes, don't get the blues, here comes the news. In September last year, Equifax said it had discovered that 145 million U.S. customers may have had their information stolen.
May.
Its investigations into the breach have revealed that the details of a further 2.4 million Americans went astray. Continuing analysis of stolen data had helped identify new victims, it said. Equifax will notify these newly identified U.S. consumers directly and will offer identity theft protection and credit file monitoring services at no cost to them, it said in a statement. Equifax made the announcement on the same day that it reported its full year earnings. The firm said, see, that's how you really find out what's going on in the world. You look at the SEC filings. Because they'll lie to the American people, but you better not lie to the government.
Yeah.
Not about financial stuff. The firm said that the breach cost more than $114 million last year after insurance payouts, but the company's profits remained healthy, helped by a strong performance in its international business and new tax cuts that the U.S. approved last year. And I'm sure that makes us all feel so good about that. The firm reported $587.3 million in profits last year, up 20% from 2016. In 2017, Equifax said an internal investigation had uncovered signs of unauthorized access to data, including names, addresses, and social security numbers. You know, everything you need to steal someone's identity. And the company set up a website for people to learn if they were among those whose information had been accessed. Excuse me. Equifax was widely criticized after the breach. And then its chief executive publicly apologized for failing to protect information and for taking so long to let victims know their data had been compromised. Several senior executives, including the chief executive, subsequently left the company because of the breach. Equifax holds data on more than 820 million consumers and 91 million businesses worldwide. It does credit checks, ID theft monitoring, and offers job verification services. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Equifax finds another million victims. And your choices are, that's annoying, these things happen, that's not so good, and Equifax should be sued. So far, 63% of you feel that Equifax should be sued.
I'm actually surprised they haven't been already.
See, yeah, right. And of course, I know you'll have more to say about this. So if you scroll down on the right underneath fascinating stuff, you'll see the forums. And the second forum down is the poll discussion. And the first item in the poll discussion so far is 3 March 18, Equifax finds another million victims. And you can vent your spleen there. And then, of course, you should also join us by giving us a call, 585-966-5299. That's 966-JAZZ. Or toll free at 1-800-790-0415.
And what's their concern, though? I mean, when the folks went ahead and see if they had been infected and they signed up through Equifax, they were also in the fine print, if I remember serves you right.
In the early day, yeah.
They were giving up all rights of being sued by that company if they leaked the information. So you gotta read that information in this case.
That got removed later. And then for a while, there was a fake Equifax sign-up check for breach that they were pointing to.
Yep.
And there are 240 lawsuits, including every state, the District of Columbia, and 60 governmental investigations from state's attorney generals, including Britain and Canada. And so the FTC, Federal Trade Commission, they've tried to combine all these 50 state class action suits into one giant suit, 322-page document listing the plaintiffs.
Right. just listing the people who are doing the suing.
Everybody, yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. Why don't they just write everybody?
Yeah.
It is an understandable anger that people have. These are the people who are supposed to... They've been given our data without us...
Authorizing it
in any way, and now they've lost it.
And didn't this start with an Apache Struts vulnerability? They had left the default administrator password to one of the subsystems on their website.
Mm-hmm.
And
if I remember it serves.
Yeah, and it was like a year after Apache fixed the flaw. The flaw was still there in Equifax's server to get exploited?
Yeah, honestly, you know, I spent 20 years as a systems administrator, and I personally believe, in my professional opinion, that whoever that person was should be fired immediately and probably arrested, because that's where it all stems from. We should probably mention that the YouTube channel...
It's a little weird today.
It's a little weird today.
I forgot an adapter.
Yeah. Steve forgot an adapter, and so we're actually just using the camera that's in his MacBook Pro.
Yep.
And so we only see each other. So you are spared the visage of Dave Enright.
Thank goodness. That's okay. I have always said I had a face for radio.
Yes, you do.
And I don't need it on camera.
Yes, you do.
I'll find a picture of him and stick it in there.
There you go. That's what we need. Just put it right up there in the middle.
We're trying to gain viewers, not lose them.
Yeah. But yeah, so it's an issue. And of course, Equifax keeps wanting us to pay for their protection. Which I don't quite understand. The person we need protecting from is them.
Yeah.
And so there's, you know, that's just kind of horrifying. But
it's the typical when there's a breach is you get free credit monitoring for a year. But when it's the credit monitoring company that got breached.
Right.
Or it's like those TV shows. I'm just the credit monitor. You have to do something else. If
right.
You're...
right. Right.
Your credit's been stolen. I've monitored and notified you.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I just alert you to it. I don't protect you.
Right. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Joel from Pittsford, New York. Hiya, Joel. What's up?
Good morning, gentlemen. I usually cannot listen to the show live on Saturdays, and I like to
Me
record
either.
It using Total Recorder, but I've changed computers, and the URL that I used to use is lost. And I've attempted this morning to set up Total Recorder with the URLs that I could get from the website for Jazz 901, and they are not working. So can you help me with a URL that I can record from?
Huh. Good question. I just realized I may be in that same predicament. I may have been recording a couple of weeks of blank.
No, because I've been using her. So the stream I'm using right now... is greece-media.monroe.edu/wgmc2.mp3.
WGMC2.
Yeah, number 2.
Okay. Yeah, because the one online is just wgmc.mp3.
That might be the high bandwidth versus low bandwidth, because this is saying
right.
I'm getting a 32K stream.
Okay, yeah, low quality is 2.
Yeah.
But I've tried those with Total Recorder, and they don't seem to be working.
Huh.
Is it, that's a stream file, which is different than a self-contained file. Maybe that's the problem?
Oh, here's an issue. I just went... maybe that's the old one.
I went to the new website, and I'm trying to get to the audio server. Yeah, it's
there.
Says it's working. So it's maybe a configuration in Total Recorder, but it used to work and now it doesn't. So when you said you got a new computer, did you migrate all the data or have you reinstalled everything?
I reinstalled everything, so I did not migrate anything that I had in previous Total Recorder.
Yeah, there's some settings file that you might be missing to play a stream versus a. Let's back up. What happens when you try? Is it recording nothing or is it recording or not recording at all?
The links work in the browser. The links do not work in Total Recorder.
So it records nothing?
It records nothing, yeah.
But the link works in the browser. So if you were to go to grease-media.monroe.edu/wgmc.mp3 on your web browser, you get it. Yeah.
That's interesting.
Total Recorder.
And I didn't know I was using the low-quality stream. I should change that to the high-quality stream.
Yeah, you should. I don't...
this high-quality FM chat.
Yeah, right. Yeah. that's a very good question. Sadly, I don't use Windows anymore. No, that's not sad at all. I'm very happy about that. But consequently, I do not... I haven't used Total Recorder in a very long time. And it theoretically should just work with MP3 files,
There's a preference. You're on the same page I am. There's a preference where you tell it what type of audio you're recording. Maybe that has to be changed.
Well, I will play around with it some more. But if you guys think of a solution, maybe you can put it up on the site.
Yeah, we will. It should just work, but you may, as Steve said, there is a preference, you may not have it properly set up for that preference.
Total Recorder has a built-in browser, and when I try the browser in Total Recorder, I'm not getting the stream either.
Yeah, well, that tells me that it's not properly connected to the codec, maybe. Did you not? Well, you shouldn't need to.
Lame? Are you saving it as an MP3? And maybe you need the lame encoder loaded.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. Are you sure you're on the latest version, which is 8.6?
Yes, because I just downloaded it.
Okay. I don't. Off the top of my head, no. And you're a licensed user?
I am.
Oh, did you go look and see if you put in the license key?
When you moved it to the new when you move it to the new computer, sometimes the license has to be entered again.
Right.
Some software is even more annoying. You have to deactivate the license on the old computer so you can activate it on the new one, which is rough when the old computer's dead.
Yeah, right. But you did that, you say?
Yes, I did.
All right. Well, this is now a puzzlement, but we will look into it, and if we find something, we'll post it in the thing. Thanks.
Appreciate it.
Sorry.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate all you do.
Thanks. Sorry.
Yeah, you should be able to pick the source and tell it what software you're using to play the file.
Right.
Either from a specific program or from the soundboard.
Right.
Or you mix the software in the soundboard so you can hear what you're recording.
Right. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 19 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported. Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we did not find anything exciting about Total Recorder while we were in our little hiatus there. I don't remember it needing any of that stuff. So the real question, I guess, becomes what I think Joel needs to do is make sure that he's got the right input source. Because I think it defaults to your sound card. And if he's doing it from a program that really he should be recording, he should grab before it gets to the sound card, yeah. And he's not doing that, then he's going to hear nothing.
Or the other option it had was a sound card loop through. You take an audio patch cable and go from out the sound card in the sound card.
Right. So, but that's not as...
Then you have two digital analog loss reductions.
Right, exactly. It's much better to do it the correct way to begin with, and that's the whole point of Total Recorder. So, Joel, that's something else you might try. In the meantime, we'll go back to the phones and talk to Bill from Irondequoit, New York. Hiya, Bill. What's up?
So I have a Apple TV, and I'm attempting to do the Apple TV remote on an iPad.
Okay.
The Apple TV is plugged into the Internet, through the Ethernet, okay?
Yep.
And so when I try to connect to it with my iPad, it says that it has to be on the same Wi-Fi network. But you can't set up a Wi-Fi network if you plug it in to the Ethernet instead of...
Well, no, it's still on... whatever network you're running. Okay, here's the deal. When you buy a router of any sort, it automatically sets up a network for you, generally 192.168.something.something.
Yep.
That is a network. Now, on some routers, when you add a wireless network to it, you have the choice of putting it on the same network or on a different network. So let's say your wired network is at 192.168.1.x.
Yes.
And you can then put your wireless network on 192.168.2.x.
Okay.
If you do that, you have two separate networks. But if you put them both on .1.x, then they are both on the same network, and you shouldn't have any trouble.
Yeah, okay. Wireless is actually... short for, you know, Wi-Fi is short for wireless, which is short for wireless Ethernet.
Right.
So it is Ethernet wirelessly.
In fact, here's a little bit of trivia. Ethernet is a radio a protocol. And when it's running on a wire, the wire acts as the carrier wave.
Mm-hmm.
So that was, you know, and that's the way they wrote Ethernet to begin with. And so when they actually set up, when wireless became a choice, it was real easy to use Ethernet because it was already a wireless standard, a radio standard. So check to make sure that the IP addresses are identical for the first three sections.
Okay.
And that should do it once you've done. Now, if you do, in fact, have to change one or the other, it's probably easier to change the wired one. Since the wireless requires you to log in and everything else,
right.
It might be six and one half dozen of the other, depending on your router. But you know, you can try. Well, the ability to make separate networks is a lovely trick if you have regular guests. So you can set up many systems have a wired network, a wireless network, and then a guest wireless network.
Right.
And if you set the guest wireless network to be a different network range, then they can't see any of your stuff and can't break into any of your stuff.
Okay.
And that's one trick for setting up IoT devices, internet-connected cameras and whatnot. Put it on your guest network. So when there is the inevitable breach in that, say, camera, it can't access the rest of the stuff on your network.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. This all makes sense.
Yep. But they have to be on the same network to get two devices to talk to each other.
Well, not necessarily. If you know the other address, you can actually, with most software, you can target that address.
Yep.
Right. Okie doke.
Thank you very much.
Good luck, Bill. An Apple TV.
Yeah, not many people have Ethernet by their television.
Right.
So Wi-Fi is the more frequent instruction setup. But if you have Ethernet, it generally is more efficient than Wi-Fi. Wires are generally more efficient than wireless.
Right. We have a news story that I'll get to a little later about first generation Apple TVs. Okay, back to the phones, and we are revisiting our old friend Joel from Pittsburgh, New York. Hiya, Joel. What's up now?
Hi, guys. Feeling a little silly. Problem solved. It turns out that I had set the recording to background record, and so I was not seeing the level meter moving, which I've been accustomed to seeing. And when I checked, it was actually recording in the background. Why I couldn't get the stream to work in the browser is another issue. But as long as it's working, I'm happy. So again, thank you for all your thoughts. I just wanted to let you know the problem was solved and it was my fault.
Excellent. Well, I'm sorry that it was an issue that had to be solved, but I commend you for solving it so quickly.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay. See you guys.
Have fun. All right. Let me take a moment and read this news item. Apple has announced it will drop iTunes support for some older devices starting May 25th. This includes the first generation Apple TV and any PC running XP or Vista. The company is introducing new security changes which will prevent those devices from using the latest version of iTunes. Apple said that the original Apple TV is an obsolete Apple product and will not be updated to support security changes. Now, please pay attention, folks. This is the Generation 1 Apple TV.
The big silver one, not right. The little black one.
Right. If you have the big silver one, it will be obsoleted on May 25th. If you have the big black one, that is the second generation or later,
yeah,
and that second, one and will still be able to access iTunes Store.
Yeah, the Apple TV itself will keep working with the content it has. It just won't be able to get new content from the iTunes Store.
Right. And if you are still running Windows XP or Vista, and many of our listeners are, you will also not be able to use the latest version of iTunes, but older Windows computers can still use previous versions, but they will be unsupported. Those of you who do so, however, won't be able to make new purchases. You will not be able to re-download previous purchases. If you're on XP or Vista, you'll need to upgrade to Windows 7 or later to continue to use iTunes normally. The writing, of course, was already on the wall for these devices. Windows XP and Vista are no longer supported by Microsoft. Apple has previously declared the original Apple TV obsolete.
Originally released in 2007.
Right.
Which
right.
is so ancient in computer terms.
Right. So have you been declared obsolete by Apple? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299 or toll free at 1-800-790-0415.
The first-gen Apple TV is actually really popular in the hacker community because it's a little Pentium computer with a hard drive in it.
Right.
And so there's lots of add-ons. There's a Plex add-on. There's a Kodi add-on. So you can use it as a home media server because it pretty much is a little television.
Right.
So I would guess people that are still using it now don't bother with the iTunes Store anymore.
Right. Right. If it also
could hook up to an analog computer television.
Yeah, I was noticing that.
Yeah, component outputs. The new ones are HDMI only.
Right, right.
And it had an optical audio jack. The later models don't do optical audio. They only do HDMI audio.
Right.
That upset a lot of the audiophiles.
Right. So if you've got one of those first-gen Apple TVs, you've got a pretty nifty toy. There's no question of that. It's not the highest-end machine, but it's a pretty nifty toy. Although a lot of people are replacing those now with Raspberry Pis and stuff. So.
Yeah, it's probably about the same power as a Raspberry Pi today.
Right, right. Well, the Raspberry Pi 3...
Ooh, it was a Pentium M at 1 gigahertz.
Right. The Raspberry Pi...
Yeah, I've got two of them. I love it.
The Raspberry Pis?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're... because I've been playing around with Kodi, and I learn how to program and play around with them. And they're nice little units. I've got the one upstairs. What I did is I wound up getting a special cat. It was Cat 6 foyer.
Sure.
To go outside.
Right.
Because for me, the shortest distance to get up to the bedroom was to literally go out the wall, up, straight up, 25 feet, and back in.
Right.
Then trying to lead it through all these walls and everything else. And the rest of my wiring was going right up on the backside of the house, too. So it worked out great. And I've got it hardwired in, connects, and I love it.
Yeah, this is the I just got a Raspberry Pi 3 Model B.
Okay.
It's a quad-core 64-bit ARM Cortex A53 processor at 1.2 gigahertz. It's about 50% faster than a Pi 2. Still only a gig of RAM. Still the same video core 4 GPU. But it's fast and it's nice, and I've toyed with putting Kodi on it. There's a thing called...
Well, you got the SD card slot?
Open Electra?
Open Electric is the one you want to use.
Yeah.
That is the lightest.
Yeah.
Because mine, you know, I wind up getting a... I think I've got a variety. I've got an 8 gig... Oh, 8 gig SD... micro SD card. And that's what I open up, load the Open Electric on. That is one of the cleanest and lightest builds.
Yeah, Open Elect, I think it's called.
Mm-hmm.
So Open Elect without the T, Open Elect.
L-E-C, yeah. Yep. But yeah. It runs fast. I mean, it is super slick. And the way it even loads up, I mean, I've loaded it on two different machines. And it, like I say, it is
fast. I've got the micro SD card. But, of course, it's also got USB in it. And so you can, if you want to, just connect an external hard drive with as much... Mm-hmm. Stuff on it as you want to put. It's also got a couple other things. So,
and this weekend is the International Raspberry Jam.
Right.
And down in Rochester, down at Interlock on Main and Goodman, they're participating in Raspberry Jam. So you can bring your Raspberry Pi and just jam together and do cool things.
Don't jam them together. That would be bad for them.
One nice thing about it does auto the Open Elect. When you're setting it up, it will sense whether it's wired or if you're on a wireless network. It finds it and both work very well. I prefer the wired just because, you know, it's more
secure.
It's
a little faster and a little more secure, yada, yada, yada. But it's got it's a gig of RAM. It's DDR2, so it's 900 megahertz. There's a 40-pin GPIO if you want to do that. It's got HDMI. Mm-hmm. It's got four USB 2.0s. It's got Ethernet, camera, display serial interface if you're into that, analog audio and video. One of the problems with the Raspberry Pi and all of those little single board computers, The external jacks are not terribly well connected to the motherboard. You got to be a little careful plugging things in and out.
All right, here's a hint for you. The one thing I found, because you say pulling those jacks in and out for the power, I got a device where it's for the Raspberry Pi. You plug it in, and at the end of it, maybe about 6 inches down, is an on-off switch. Because you don't want it running all the time, so all I have to do is go over and hit the button, and it turns the Raspberry Pi on. Otherwise, the default wire that comes with it is just plug in. So you're either plugging it in at the Raspberry Pi or down at the switch.
Right, but I'm talking about the USB ports and the HDMI port. Those connectors are not terribly sturdy. You want to be very careful with those.
Yeah, you don't certainly go yanking on them.
Right.
Yeah.
Certainly getting one of those nice little cases can help.
Oh, that's what I've got both mine in. Yeah. The plastic cases are worth every penny.
Yep. And that helps, but you still want to be a little bit careful with that. But like I said, I've got a Raspberry Pi. I just set it up.
And how much does this quad-core processor computer cost?
$35.
Yeah.
This is not a joke.
Yeah.
It's a quad-core 1.2 gigahertz machine, and it costs $35. Now,
with Bluetooth, Wi-Fi?
Right, with Bluetooth, SD Wi-Fi, card. Four USB 2.0 ports, audio out, HDMI, and a port for micro SD card. Now, if you're going to get a decent size micro SD card, it will cost you more than the Raspberry Pi.
Yeah, and the thing of this, Steve, though, for a few bucks more, what he's talking about, you can get the case and the power supply, and it'll bump you up to maybe $75.
Yeah, you have to buy the power supply separately as well. But the whole thing is well under $100.
Yep.
And you suddenly have a computer. And I haven't decided whether I'm going to put OpenElec on it or I'm going to just let it look for SETI at home stuff. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 39 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported. Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And before I read the next news thing, I should talk a little bit more about the Raspberry Pi. There's a great magazine called Magpie, M-A-G-P-I. And, of course, you can subscribe to it, and it comes to you in the mail. Mm-hmm. Or it's free online. So you can at raspberrypi.org. And they've got all kinds of software and hardware mods and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, an entire computer for $75 that really is a usable, useful computer.
And getting into it is a lot of fun. I mean, when I first got into it, and that's before I met my wife, you know, I could spend hours. I mean, I'd go to work and then come home, and I'd wonder where the heck most of the night went, just like when I was first introduced to the internet, learning all these two different things. And it's like, oh.
Thank you for not calling me at 6 a.m.
Heck, I better get to bed because it's daylight's going to be coming very soon.
Or heck, I better get in the shower because I have to work in 20 minutes.
That almost happened, but no. But now my wife realizes that, you know, when I do some of these changes, it's not taking as much time, but it still takes some time.
Right, right,
and I get
right.
focused, you know, and I got to do boom, boom, boom. But it is a whole different era. And because I like to play around with the stuff because, you know, fixing hardware and that. So this is just another venue because, let's face it, now PCs, be honest with you, it's getting hard.
Yeah.
To survive in the PC world as a repair shop or anything else, that's why I do it part-time now. Because more and more stuff is going to the laptops, the Chromebooks, and the tablets.
Right.
And, you know, the desktops are just for businesses. Steve, and even they're going to laptops.
But ironically, the repair costs haven't dropped much.
Well, right. Yeah. If you want one of these things repaired, you still got to take it to somebody like Dave or Steve, and it's going to cost you more than a dollar. Steve is putting up a link to Magpie Magazine over there. And what's really nice is there is actually a version of Windows you can run on the Raspberry Pi. So I know a number of people who do a lot of their security research on a Pi.
Yep.
Because if it gets hacked in any way, well, it's real easy to fix, or just you know, take a hammer to it if you have to. Buy a new one for $35 because you've already got the case and you've already got the power supply and everything else. And it, because it has Bluetooth, you can do Bluetooth mouse and keyboard, or you can plug in a, you know, everybody's got an extra keyboard and mouse.
Oh, no, I got a little miniature keyboard.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks like a game thing, and it's got the mouse in the center and the keyboards, and you power, you know, just charge it up. But I got it for
and
both of them.
It's Bluetooth?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just sit there and turn it on, and all of a sudden the mouse shows up on the screen. You can move it around, and it's got all the functions of a regular keyboard, but it's not much bigger than an average gamepad.
Would you send me a link to that?
Sure will.
I might be interested in that. Because one of the things you can do is, of course, you got to have some sort of monitor for it. And in my case, I've got a nice extra monitor just sitting around. I can mount the Raspberry Pi on the back of it.
Just do it to your TV.
Well, I could, but I've got this extra monitor.
Yeah, well, it'll do it today. But I mean, I've got on one of them. I got it on a 55-inch TV.
Yeah, if you're going to do OpenElec, then yes, that's exactly what you want to do. All right, back to the phones. I suppose we might as well get some work done here. Our next caller is Steve from Ontario, New York. Hiya, Steve. What's up?
How are you doing, Nick?
Peachy, how are
really
you?
Really appreciate your show. Hey, quick question. Hopefully, quick question. You know, I've been using the security tangle. It works really great. Just wondering, and, you know, I read the thing in the DNC a few weeks ago about where, you know, you can buy all the, you know, buy the paid versions of all the software so that you, you know, automatically get the updates and everything. I was wondering if there's a, I know you guys don't do recommendations for packages, but is there a full feature package out there that you can buy that would do that without having to, I mean, Security Tangle is wonderful, but it isn't that it takes so long to run everything. It's that you have to be so attentive to starting this after you do this. And
yeah, it is tedious. I certainly admit that.
But that's where, Steve, if you were to turn around, granted, we recommend Super Anti-Spyware and Malware Bytes. Those are the two biggies. Now, here's a hint. You want to make life easier for you and less painful? Is you just go ahead and sign up for those services. They will then work in the background.
Right.
And keep your machine safe. The ones we recommend are free, but you got to do a little due diligence, like on Malware Bytes, and run those every so often. Whereas you just go ahead and pay for them, and it helps support and keep great programming like that going, which we've been recommending, I'll bet you, for a good 8-9 years now.
Probably more than 20.
Yeah. And the one advantage of having two separate programs is that they do tend to work better than one program that tries to do it all.
One doesn't do it all.
Right. And the big thing you have to remember is the Security Tango is not something you need to run regularly once you've cleaned your machine.
Correct.
Okay.
Once you've cleaned your machine, then buying Malware Bytes, buying super anti-spyware, and buying a good antivirus so they all work in the background means that only if you feel that you really do have an issue do you need to go back and dance the whole tango.
Yep, exactly.
I didn't realize that they were going to work in the background for the paid versions of those. I thought you still, are paying for them, but you just didn't have to do the
Right.
When you open them up, you didn't
You can schedule that for
the evening. You can set them up to not run in the background too, so you can do whatever you want, but they will generally run in the background. Or you can, as Dave just said, you can say, I leave my computer on 24/7, so do your scans from midnight on.
Yep.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's what I usually do with the antivirus and stuff like that, because depends on the computer you're running on. I mean, some of them I've seen them take 8 hours to run an antivirus on one machine.
Right. Right. Right.
Now, one other question. I know one of you guys builds computers. Do you guys build computers for individuals too?
I used to, but I don't anymore because it's gotten to where you could get one online so much cheaper.
The amount of research it takes you to find all the pieces that work together, you lose any profit you do.
Oh, right. I've been through that. I mean, I want to go to one of the local places to have a system built. I just figured help you out too. So
there are a number of them here in the city that you could look at that have been around for a few years. Tell you what, email me, dave@jazz901.org, and I can recommend a few to you.
What's the email again?
dave@jazz901.org.
Okay.
All right.
Sounds good. I mean, I know right now, looking at some articles, it seems like with all the crypto stuff that's going on, the video cards are going a little crazy price-wise. So.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. If you're into gaming, you can spend more on the video card you do on the entire rest of the computer.
I'm not into gaming, but the PCs I've used where you're using onboard video, on the Intel chips and stuff like that, just doesn't seem like it works for, not that it doesn't work for anything. I'd rather have dedicated video memory than.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. No, that's what I've recommended for decades.
Right. Yep. All right. Excellent.
Sounds great. Thank you very much, guys. Have a great weekend, and hopefully you can drive safely.
Thanks, Steve. Yep. You too. One. Have fun.
You too. Bye.
I was amused. I was watching one of the news stations the other day, and one of the people said, well, it looks like that snow will all be melted by the middle of the week. And I thought, no.
Oh.
No. Way too heavy, way too deep, and not warm enough at night.
Yeah.
For that snow to be gone in a few days.
I think we're supposed to get some rain, sure. So that'll help.
That'll help.
Certainly hurt your back trying to shovel it.
Dude, yeah. Tell me about it.
Yeah.
I made the stupid mistake of leaving my car down at the bottom of the driveway, as you guys know my house, instead of putting it up on top of the hill.
Right.
So Sandy and I had to get out this morning and dig. We literally dug two lanes.
Yep.
For the go, this one steep part of the hill. Luckily, the way the wind was blowing, it must have been coming directly out of the west, and went on the top part of the house, the bottom part, the section in the middle. It was just a light coating. I was able to quick shovel that.
Right,
and then
right.
With the light, it melted. But the other snow?
I'll tell you what. You know, God bless you. But I've looked at houses, and you know, they have that driveway that goes down like that. Friends of mine lived in one during college, and I can't tell you how many times they got stuck. I would never, ever. But, and, of course, they had a dirt driveway as well, so mud and everything else, not just snow.
Well,
but they got stuck more often than I can remember. I would get a call saying, can you come and pick us up? I said, I'll meet you at the top of your driveway. I'm not coming down that driveway.
I mean, normally if I can snowblow it.
Right.
You know, I was good. And I started that yesterday. But, of course, just as I'm getting started, because you had to do it very slowly, and all of a sudden it popped the belt night. Only had myself to cuss at it.
Yep.
Because it popped off a few weeks ago, and I'm thinking, maybe I should think about getting it. This time it came off, and it wasn't going back.
All it takes is 1 minute of laziness.
Yeah.
I had a couple of people say, it looks like winter's over. It's January. No, it's not.
It's not over. Right. Right. And this is March.
And now we're in March.
Have you never been in Rochester in March? It snows.
We usually have one good snowstorm. In March.
My daughter was born on March 9th, so her birthday's coming up next week, this Friday. And it was a blizzard. It was a whiteout blizzard. My wife said, we need to go to the hospital now. I said, no, we do not. We do not need to go to the hospital. We're going to the hospital right now. But it was whiteout conditions. It was
horrifying.
It's
my brother's birthday, too.
See what?
My brother's birthday
there you
is
go.
March 9th.
But she, and then, you know, 3 days later, bringing her home was still
snowing.
It wasn't a whiteout anymore, but it was still
snowy.
There was still, you know, an extra, there's another foot of snow. And of course, and now you're reading this, the reality is now that if the snow is done, it's going to be flooding next.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so we have to be a little worried and a little careful about that. But
and the lakes are already high enough now.
But that's one good reason to buy yourself a Raspberry Pi and sit at home and play with it.
When you're trapped in the house, you've got something to tinker with.
It really is very easy to set up. Basically, it's a single board computer, which means it's done. You buy a case and you slot it into the case.
Get the case, though, definitely. Because the only reason I say that, for the little bit, you can get whole packages. If you go even to Amazon, you can get the Raspberry Pi 3 package, which includes the board, the case. Someone will even throw in a 2 or 4 gig SD card.
Right.
And the power supply.
Right.
And then you can get the, like I did, I wound up upgrading the power supply to the on-off button. I'm just lazy like that. I don't want to be unplugging it down at the switch.
Right.
And my little keyboard. That little keyboard is a lot nicer to work with.
The Kana Kit is the one I have.
Everything together, $70.
$70. And it comes with 32 gig.
Yeah.
Card. And by the way, it comes with the heat sinks, which you definitely want to put on.
Yeah, oh, definitely.
You definitely want to put the heat sinks on. But that's just, it's a peel and stick.
Yeah, and they hold up good. I've had them on mine now for, 3 years?
Yeah.
3 years.
Yeah.
And they're
very cool little products. And like he said, 70, what was it, $70 we said?
Mm-hmm.
And You'll need an HDMI cable. I don't know if the Canakit comes with it.
No, you got to buy your own HDMI cable.
Mine did, but I had the school special because it came with diodes and LEDs and a breadboard and a whole bunch of other stuff to do experiments
back
with.
Back when there was real electronics, not just chip.
Real electronics.
Yeah, and you had to solder it.
There was a little sheet that
the
said,
old heat
here's,
cats.
How you, yep. here's how you solder this in. And I thought, yeah. I don't do soldering anymore.
I built a crystal radio set in school.
Yep.
And I got a C on my soldering.
Yeah.
But I got an A on performance because I could pick up stations all over the world. I got Radio Madrid once.
Nice.
Sweet.
I hooked the antenna to the telephone rotary dial stop.
Oh, yeah.
So it used the entire house telephone system as an antenna.
Very cool. Very, very cool.
And a little tiny crystal radio set. No battery. Just the crystal radio.
The stuff that you can do is truly amazing. Truly amazing. Yeah, the Canakit. I don't know. Canakit. And it's $70 and it's got everything you need to play along, including the tiny little connector gizmo there. All right. Well, we've thrown away one entire hour of our lives together, and we get to do it again. So don't go anywhere, except possibly to grab a drink. And we'll be back in just a few minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour, and you're listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites. On the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece, Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
Online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, you are hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites right here on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. And we are very lucky because we have Dennis from Rochester, New York on the line. Hi, Dennis. What's up?
Hi, guys. At this time, I'm on a cell phone. Can you hear me okay?
Yes. Can you hear us?
Yes.
Yeah, that's not so
okay.
good. Okay. Go ahead.
I'm trying to think of something to do for my son who's in his 20s, and he's got a smartphone. He has an old laptop where now the screen is damaged, and I kind of feel bad that he's got only the phone. Maybe that's just my imagination, but I've got two desktop PCs and the whole thing. I've got an extra monitor laying around. I have an extra keyboard. So compare Raspberry Pi to a Chromebook. First off, I know it's cheaper.
Yeah, it's cheaper.
But tell me, make other comparisons.
Okay, the Chromebook is specifically designed to be a lightweight, carry-around, super secure laptop.
Web browser.
It's essentially a web browser, a Chrome web browser in a box. And it lets you do anything you can do in the Chrome web browser. So that includes the entire Google Docs suite of word processor, spreadsheet, et cetera, et cetera. All the add-ons that you can do in the Chrome browser to do audio and video and whatever everything else is. And the big thing about it is it's very, very secure. And it's portable. A And you can get them from $150 up to $1,000. So, you know, you can find your price point and it works fine. If you get one of the higher end ones, it also will do Android apps. So okay. You have that whole panoply of stuff that you can add in. And they're saying next year you'll be able to run Linux on them as well. Now, let's contrast that with the Raspberry Pi. It will run either, it'll run a version of Linux, and whether that version is, there are several different versions, I don't have to name them, but you can run several different versions of Linux, and it becomes a full Linux computer. Now, it's a quad-core processor running at 1.2 gigahertz, but it's an ARM Cortex processor, so it's not as fast as it sounds.
Okay.
Right. But it does, you know, it's a full blown Linux computer. So you can run the full LibreOffice suite as well as music stuff. As we were talking about earlier, there's a program called OpenELEC, which lets you do all kinds of media things. And you can pretty much do anything you want with it. Now, if you bought that Kena kit, that comes with 32 gig card. So if you really wanted to do home entertainment stuff, obviously you're going to add an external hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
But it does come with four USB 2.0 things. So if you've got an extra keyboard, an extra mouse, an extra monitor, all you're paying for is the $70 for that kit. Now, there's also a thing.
Well, I'm going to say that's the big thing, kit. Raspberry Pi, I often like to think of it's more for people that like to tinker and build things. Mm-hmm. Then right. Once you've built it, it's a whole computer.
Yeah,
but
right.
You build it. It's a kit.
But look, I just built one over the weekend, and trust me, it was not a big deal because it comes as a single board computer. You want to pop it into the case.
Put the heat sinks in.
Put the heat sinks in, and you're essentially done. Then you still have to install the operating system and all that. But in terms of hardware, if what you're looking for is a computer, you're done. Now, if you really wanted to get fancy, Dancy, there's something called the Pi Top, and Steve actually put a link for that up already as well. And that is $129, I believe, dollar shell that turns a Raspberry Pi into a laptop.
Wow.
So now you've essentially got a Linux laptop for under $200.
Okay, so it runs Linux, and you can put, say, LibreOffice on it. You have to put anti-spyware, anti-malware on it, that sort of thing.
Yes and no. There is a program. Linux is a very different beast, and most of the software you get for it is free. So okay. There is a free piece of software called ClamAV, Clam Antivirus. And that can be installed easily. Essentially, as you know, things like your phone come with an app store.
Mm-hmm.
There's essentially an app store for Linux.
Oh.
So you run that app store.
Git.
Well, yes. But there's actually a GUI interface to software. It's called the Software Center. So you open that up and you type in, you know, antivirus, and it comes up and says, oh, Clam. So let's load Clam. And you do that and you say install. And a minute later, depending on how fast your connection is, boom, you've got antivirus on your machine.
That's a pretty evil looking logo they have.
It really is a very evil looking logo. But so those things. Now, like I said, it's not Windows, right? So you do a little learning.
Okay.
You know, 20-year-olds. Can learn.
did you say it had Wi-Fi or no Wi-Fi?
It has Wi-Fi. It has Wi-Fi and hardwired Ethernet. It has four USB ports. It has Bluetooth. I don't know what you're missing. I truly do not know what you're missing.
Yeah.
And you can get larger, well, you said SD card, 32 gigabyte SD card. You'd have to get some sort of external hard drive to USB if you wanted more storage then, I gather.
Right. So it comes with a 32 gig card. For most people who are going to, like, if you're going to use, for example, Google Docs, right, which you can do by just, you know, loading up the web browser and going to drive.google.com. Then you don't need any extra storage because you're storing everything in Google's Drive.
Mm-hmm.
But if you wanted your own storage set, you either want a bigger SD card or you want an external hard drive, which you obviously cannot. I don't think you can put. Maybe you can put in the Pi Top. But for the desktop version, you can just set it next to it.
And they've got a deal running now that if you subscribe to the print version of the Magpie, you get a free Raspberry Pi Zero.
Yeah, the Zero is really for playing. You really want to buy a soldering iron and some wire with that one.
Okay.
But the Raspberry Pi 3, like I said, you can go to Canakit. Canakit, and you can get that either at canakit.org or com, or you can get it through Amazon or, you know, whatever. And for $70, you get the full blown Megillah, and so you can get everything you need, in one little kit. And then you just open it up, put it all together, and you're done. And it took me, and I have, you know, I've got fairly severe arthritis. So I essentially have catcher's mitts at the end of my arms these days. But it took me 5 minutes to put the whole thing together.
Oh, that's cool. Well, that's very helpful. Is there time for me to ask Steve a question, or do I need to save that for another time?
No, yeah, quickly.
Should I have malware protection on my iPhone 6, and if so, what?
Generally, no. You can install something like Lookout, but by itself, malware can't get in because software has to be installed through the App Store. And if something does sneak in through the Apple App Store, then Apple finds it and removes it. But what you will get, and there's really no protection against it, are the fake virus warnings and fake, you know, Amazon certificates. I've been getting plagued with fake Amazon certificates. Fill out this question and we'll give you a $1,000 Amazon gift card. No, no, you won't.
No, you won't.
Ignoring all the testimonials that say they got their Amazon gift card.
Yeah, right.
But generally, no, it's pretty locked down the way it is.
Okay, good. I'm all set then. Thanks, guys.
Thanks. Have fun. Yeah, can you tell the Raspberry Pi is my new obsession?
Because your printer hasn't come yet.
Because my 3D printer hasn't come yet. I have to have something to play with.
Can you control the printer with your Pi?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Look up Octoprint. 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 Except that'll have, essentially the printer I'm getting has a Raspberry Pi built into it, essentially. And so, it'll already do that.
It's a snappy interface to your printer.
It's a snappy interface. It's very nice. The lady who writes it is doing amazing work. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Elmer from Greece, New York. Hi, Elmer. What's up?
Hi, good afternoon. I'm having a little bit of a glitch with, Microsoft Word.
Huh.
When I open up a file that's in the DOCX format,
yeah,
the documents all open in read-only.
Oh.
That doesn't happen with the DOC format documents, the older ones.
Are these documents you've created yourself?
Yes, they are. And some of them have been around for years.
Yeah. That's usually a permission error.
If I take a look at the file properties in File Explorer, the read-only is not checked.
Right. So if you open, if you open with document and then go to save it again, there should be a choice for tools.
For tools.
And under options, there's a checkbox for read-only. Make sure that's not checked.
Okay. I must have a different... I have...
That's Office 365. All right.
Because if I go under File, there is an Options.
This is under Review Restrict Editing.
Oh, okay.
In 2010.
Review, click on Restrict Editing.
Yep. And then uncheck. Uncheck read-only.
Okay, I've got restrict formatting and editing. Let's see, the only... Yeah, there's an editing restrictions that says allow only this type of editing in this document.
Yeah, what program are you using?
And then what does it have for the flag under that?
The box is not checked.
Okay, so
but
it's not...
the box says no changes, read only.
Right. What antivirus are you using?
I am using Avast.
The Avast may be, and this is just, look, we're going to make a test here, so pay attention.
Okay.
Avast may be protecting you.
Okay.
From the possibility of bad stuff.
Word macrovirus.
And therefore opening your Word documents as read-only. And the way you test that is to turn off Avast and open a document.
Okay.
But pay attention. You have to remember, because you have to remember to turn it back on again. And so if it's that, now where is it in Avast?
Cause I think in Avast, they give you the option. You can even, have it turned off for a amount of time or until the next reboot.
Okay.
If I remember correctly.
No, there's a section in Avast, that tells you where you can turn it on and off again. Are you on Windows 10?
Yes.
Yeah. So what you want to do is look for your blocked apps. Open up Avast, go to Protection, and then go to Ransomware Shield, click Blocked / Allowed Apps, and look at the list, and if Word or Excel or whatever is blocked, unblock it.
But then won't that let macroviruses work?
Well, yeah, then if you do have a macrovirus, it will work. So,
you want to block the bad Word files but let the good Word files in.
Right. So the first thing you want to do before you do any of this is do a full scan of your machine using Avast. Okie doke. All right, well, it looks like we got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 19 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, here comes a surprise. We... our sound bites.
That was a different intro.
It was. It was very nice. And we have Ernesto from Parenton, New York on the line. Hi, Ernesto. What's up?
Hi, guys. Listen, just a quick question. I made an old computer about 2008 or so, and then recently, over the last month or so, it goes on. It will not turn on, and sometimes it turns on, and then after a while it didn't even turn on, and I don't know what happened. Besides a dead power supply, what could cause that?
It could be a burned out motherboard.
Yeah.
Could be as simple as a bad switch.
Is this a desktop or a laptop?
Desktop.
All right. One thing you can easily tell on the power, as far as the desktop, is if you turn it on and if you look at the back part of the case, you got to have a flashlight usually. And if you turn it on, you should see the fan moving in the power supply.
Sometimes I had switched the power supply and that didn't do anything, and the fan didn't even go on. Then I took it to a place over here, and they tried and they said yeah, it came on and off. They noticed that and they couldn't figure it out.
All right, then what it could be, and again without seeing the machine I can't really tell, but sometimes If the heat sink in that on the CPU chip,
yeah,
isn't fully mounted down there, or the fan isn't turning on the CPU,
yeah, nothing was going on. It was dead.
Yeah, see, that'll overheat. If the fan on the CPU isn't turning, that causes it to overheat, and that will come on for a little bit. As soon as it heats up too much, it shuts itself off because it's protecting itself.
Yeah, but it wasn't. I mean, the whole unit was dead. I mean, nothing was going on. And then once in a while, it would turn on. And I took it to a shop, and they didn't figure it out. The only thing they said, well, you replace the motherboard and see what happens.
That's probably where you would wind up doing is if the power supply's been switched and you're turning it on and nothing's happening, 10-1 odds, then it's the power supply and that and the electronics on the motherboard.
Yeah, disconnect everything you can from the board, the internal hard drive, optical drive. Take out all the RAM cards, but maybe one.
Mm-hmm.
We call this the minimum configuration.
Yep.
And see what happens. And if the only thing left is the motherboard, then that's the only thing left.
Pretty much left. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'll have to do that then. And thanks for the advice.
Yep.
Thanks.
Okay,
sorry.
Bye-bye.
Yep.
It's always frustrating when something breaks, and sort of one of the secret things in tech support. You replace a part if that fixed it, you're ahead. If it didn't fix it, you replace the next part, see if
right.
that fixes it, and then replace the next part, see if that fixes it.
Right. It's troubleshooting, and troubleshooting is hard. Oh, there it is. Thank you. Troubleshooting is hard, It's what? It's time consuming. Exactly
right.
And
that's what some folks don't realize. They think, oh, yeah, you can do it real easy.
Yeah.
Okay, if it's so easy, then why didn't you do it?
You do it. Exactly right. The reality is that troubleshooting done correctly will pinpoint most any problem, but it takes time.
And you might not like the answer, but.
Right, right.
Don't shoot the messenger.
Right. Sometimes the answer is. It's dead, Jim,
mm-hmm.
and you're done,
yeah.
and that's the end of it. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Bob from Greece, New York. Hiya, Bob. What's up?
Well, it has to do with Edge.
Yeah.
As you well know, you guys, there's a feature on Edge with a star icon up at the top of the screen, and if you want to put a website, for instance, on your favorites list, you should be able to click that star, and it happens. But either I'm doing something wrong, or there's else something else wrong, because it's a very convenient thing to have, but it doesn't work for me right now.
Okay, what happens when you try?
Well, I press the star, and the particular website does not appear then on the favorites list.
Does the star turn yellow? Does it change from clear to yellow?
I've got it right now. Yes. When the pointer is on the star, it's yellow.
Okay. When you look at your favorites bar, is it full?
No, not by any means.
Okay. So when you click on that favorites star,
it should then stay yellow.
Yeah, and it should. Bookmark it.
Okay.
Is it a bookmark or a favorite? And does Edge handle those differently?
Favorite is what I'm looking for.
Yeah. Okay.
It's. I'm looking. Not. We don't. We don't use Edge, so we're not quite.
Yeah,
sure.
I'm not entirely sure. If you click on do you have the three horizontal lines there on the right?
Yes.
Microsoft is calling that the hub now. So if you click on the hub, you should see your favorites and your reading list and your history. Look around and see if it's putting it in one of those instead of on the favorites bar itself.
Yeah, it might be going in a favorites folder, not
right.
the favorites bar.
Right.
Okay. Well, listen, I won't take your time. I'll go ahead and do that.
Right. It's probably in the favorites folder rather than on the bar.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Yep. And you can move it from the folder to the bar if you want to.
Okay.
I've almost given up on bookmarks and favorites because you get so many of them, they become so unmanageable. So the two or three things that I really need the most, I'll make a favorite, but then everything else, which is my problem. I read about this 2 weeks ago. How do I get back to it?
Right.
But if I'd have marked it as a favorite, it would be in the midst of my thousands of favorites.
Right.
And sometimes it's easier to search the history.
Right.
That was always one of the things people were asking for is a good way to manage your bookmarks. And what annoys me is when you add a bookmark or a favorite, it puts it at the bottom of the list.
Right.
Which then, as you were saying, is it full? It falls off the list. How about you put it at the top of the front of the list? It's the most recent one.
Yeah,
so make it first.
Yeah, well, you want to move it somewhere, you can.
Right. The basic idea is you're supposed to manage them by making folders and everything else and actually do it yourself. I know, but that's the theory right there. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is our friend Al from Rochester, New York. Hi, Al. What's up?
Hey, guys, I see you're still bringing clarity and wisdom to the masses.
No, you're talking to us on sound bites.
Yes, I know.
Yeah. I think they're farther off the dial.
Yeah, right.
Those other guys.
Okay. But you're having fun at the same time, so that's important.
That's what counts.
That's what counts. Hey, taking it back to a couple of previous callers, a gentleman who had a son with a broken laptop, and he was debating about the merits of a Chromebook versus you guys are suggesting a Raspberry Pi.
Well, no, I love my Chromebook, and I think it's if what you're looking for is a full-blown take-it-out-of-the-box-and-turn-it-on computer, the Chromebook is amazing. If what you're looking for is something to play with, then certainly the Raspberry Pi is the thing. I'm sorry, go ahead. You had more to say. I apologize.
Sure. Well, no, just a thought. I may be mishearing it, but I thought he said something effective. The son had a laptop with a broken screen. I would wonder if he already has a spare TV, why not give the son a TV and just tell him to plug it back at the back of the laptop?
Oh, that's good. I didn't pay attention. That's a good idea.
Yeah.
And that you're right. That would turn it into a desktop. So it's now not portable, but so what? He's still, as long as he's got a thing he can plug it into, or if in fact, what was it, Dennis. If Dennis has an extra screen, you could plug that old laptop into that extra screen. And the way most laptops work is if you plug in an external monitor, it will use it, whether it mirrors the monitor that you've already got or it's an extra monitor or whatever. Once he's got it connected, he should be able to set up the operating system so that it says, use this as my primary monitor.
There's usually a key that switches between mirror mode and spanner mode. We often call that a portable desktop. You pick it up, carry it somewhere, plug it into another monitor there.
Right. Sure. That's an excellent point.
I have to say that your comments about the Cana kit and whatever really had me browsing and looking at it and going, ooh, this looks like fun. And
see?
Yes, I need another thing to do.
That's exactly right. It's a toy, but it's a great toy.
Yeah, something you mess up. Oh, well, you start over. No biggie.
It costs you $70. Big deal. You can play and start all over again and just have as much fun as you want to have. And that one time you think to yourself, you know what I really need? I need this, but I don't want to screw around with my main machine to get it.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
yes. Screwing around with the main machine has stopped me many a time.
Right. But now you have another toy to play with. And knowing you, you've got keyboards and mice and monitors just sitting around waiting.
Yes. From 1982 forward.
Yeah, exactly.
And like I say, you just get the basic Raspberry Pi kit for $70. You've got everything, the power supply, the board, the case, which I still, and Nick knows too. You want the case. And have yourself a ball.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's very fun.
Who knows? That may be in my future, but maybe I better finish my taxes first.
So. Yeah. Well, that's your start, and then once you're done with that, you're on your way.
Yeah. Okay. Hey, thanks, guys.
Yep.
You're welcome, man.
All right, have fun.
You too. Thanks.
And then, of course, once you've got your Raspberry Pi, you get Edwin the Duck. It's a giant yellow rubber ducky. That you put the Raspberry Pi in and, it does things.
Cool.
Yeah. It's a very cool toy.
Well, like I say, when I got addicted to it.
That was on Planet of the Apps, that short-lived show that everyone ignored on Apple Music.
Yeah, right.
Like you said, for the folks that want to play, and that's the key thing, folks, when we're recommending this, this is not for the person who is lighthearted and doesn't mind getting into and playing around because you're going to mess things up. Get used to that fact right away. You're going to go through a lot of learning curve. on these devices.
Right.
And you need time and patience. So if you're not willing to put that time and patience in, and you don't get upset, this is the other key thing. You don't get upset if you mess it up. Oh, I got to start again. You see that as a challenge and having fun with it because that's what it's for. I know it sounds weird. Getting all frustrated because you do this? Yeah, but the other end result of, you know, accomplishing something, getting it up and working is a lot of fun.
Right.
At least for us other folks.
Right. It's exactly right. There's a lot of very cool things you can do with it. And again, I would not necessarily recommend that if you are a beginner or just somebody who just wants to sit down, turn on their computer and go, that you get a Raspberry Pi. But for the people who like to play, it's very hard to find something better to play with than this.
What's interesting is in the early days of computing, it was all like that. You built your computer from parts. You wrote your own programs. You got together with people to talk about and swap programs. And then we kind of got out of that with custom-made stuff. It's so much so that we have to have the maker movement now to get back into making things.
Mm-hmm, right.
So for so long, no one made anything.
Right. Our generation of computer people played with computers. Yeah. We did all that stuff.
So I think what happened is with our kids, we didn't want them to have to do all that hard work. We want it to be better. So you just give them a preassembled thing.
Right. That's like my meeting when my father came over from Italy. People made fun of him because of his accent and et cetera, et cetera. So he was determined I would be an American. I would not learn Italian. And he worked with his hands all his life, and he was determined that I would not work with my hands. And so every time I wanted to go downstairs and help him do stuff, he said, no, here's a book. Go sit down and learn something. Right? And so it's, you know, we want better for our kids than we had. So we assume different is better, I guess.
Yeah.
And so we don't have quite the same kind of education for our kids that we have for ourselves. Now, is theirs better? I hope so. I absolutely hope so, but I don't necessarily know that. You know, it's not.
Like you, I question some of it because the initiative to go out there and try to take it apart and play around with it, you don't see it as much. Most of them just want the instant gratification. Here it is. Go ahead and use it. Not like in my days when I remember that PC Junior that I got. I didn't have it but 3 days, and I had the thing tore apart. And my late wife said, what the heck are you doing? And she was headed off to England. And I said, well, I'm upgrading it to memory. She goes, you only had it 3 days. I go, yeah, but I got to make it better.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it?
My problem was always putting it back together.
Yeah, and getting it apart is pretty easy, actually.
And the leftover parts you always had.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, you on the phone, and all of us on a whole lot more of Sound Bites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And in 44 minutes after the hour, we are grooving to the music, and we are talking to Steve from Greece, New York. Hiya, Steve, what's up?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I actually don't have a question. But, Steve, and I know this doesn't do any good as a Mac user, but Chrome, and I'm presuming Chromebook, has an app called Open Bookmark Manager that is searchable just like any search engine. So if you name your bookmark, if you put computer junk series 3, you can search any of those words. It'll pull up your bookmark.
Yep. A lot of the browsers have a bookmark search and a history search built in now because it was such a big pain for a long time.
But right.
That's kind of nice for Chrome.
Right. And yeah, it is. And unfortunately, the guy who called was Bob from Greece had an Edge. It was using Microsoft Edge. But you can definitely, with pretty much any browser, go into the bookmark manager, and they have search from there.
And
so that's kind of a two-step process. But
yeah, but this is right on your right across the top. It's an app.
Right. Right. And it looks like it's excellent. So you just click on it, and boom, there you are. Very cool. Thanks.
No problem. Enjoy the day, guys. Go shovel some snow.
Yeah. All right, hang up on him now.
I'm going to dump him.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly.
I had to get up extra early this morning to help my son shovel his car out so he could go to work.
Yeah.
Because, of course, he couldn't do it yesterday.
Right.
When he was home all day long.
Of course.
Right. Oh, here's a short one. We have time for a short
one. We'll do that one about the crypto mining.
Yeah. That's not a short one, but we'll do that one. The rise of drive-by cryptocurrency mining and a growing number of websites has led to a renewed demand for ad-blocking software. Web users are seeking new ways to ward off hidden code that saddles computers with resource-draining coin mining. Now some miners are employing a trick first popularized by botnet software that bypasses ad-blocking. Domain name generating algorithms are a software-derived means for creating a nearly unlimited number of unique domain names on a regular basis. DGAs, domain name generating algorithms, as DGAs as they're usually called, came to light in 2008 following the release of the highly viral Conficker worm. To prevent white hats from seizing the domain names Conficker used to receive command and control instructions, the malware generated hundreds of new unique domains each day that infected computers would check for updates. In the event that the old domains were sinkholed, Conficker needed to reach only one of the new addresses for it to remain under its creator's control. The burden of registering more than 90,000 new domain names every year has proved so great to white hats that Conficker continues to operate even now. Researchers reported over the last weekend that an advertising network is using DGAs to conceal the in-browser currency mining code it runs on website. Normally, the ad network will redirect visitor browsers to serve.popad.net, which hosts ads that load coinhive.min.js. That's the JavaScript code that bogs down the visitor's computer by making them participate in a giant mining pool hosted by CoinHive.com, which keeps 30% of the proceeds and gives the remainder to the advertiser or website that provided the referral.
Some reports of up to $10,000 a day they're earning.
Yeah. When you've got that many people doing the work, millions and millions of computers, then yes, you can do that. But it means that it's using your computer. So you need to be able to search your computer regularly for a program called coinhive.min.js. And if you find it, delete it.
And we're seeing many ad blockers are now blocking it, and spyware programs are now looking for it. There is a website called Donate Your Tab. If you want to activate a crypto mining program, it will use your computer power to mine currency. Right now they're doing stopping gun violence. They were doing the Puerto Rico hurricane victims for a while. So what people have been now the bad guys are finding out is you can make an ad with this crypto miner in it and push it into the ad network. And then suddenly everyone going to a legitimate public website will see this malicious ad. So, you know, we used to say don't go down dark alleys with $20 bills hanging out of your pocket. But now, you know, you go to Forbes and you get an ad. You go to CNN, you get an ad. And some of these ads now have crypto miners in them. And because they're being stuck on so many millions of computers, the bad guys can generate a ton of money. And CoinHive, as the broker in the middle, they're not caring who they sell their services to because they take 30%.
Right. One of the problems that crypto miners have is that it now costs you more in electricity than you make crypto mining.
Yep.
But if I'm using your electricity and computer, then I win. Mm-hmm. Right. Costs me nothing. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Charlie from Henrietta, New York. Hiya, Charlie. What's up?
Hey, guys. So I have a question about a Raspberry Pi.
Yeah.
So I have a Pi 3B.
Yep.
And I'm just wondering what kind of web browser you recommend for the Pi 3B.
Well, it comes with one. But what operating system are you running on it?
Raspbian.
And you can load, well, it's not Chrome, it's Chromium.
Yeah.
But it is essentially the Chrome web browser. You can load Firefox. You can load any web browser you want because Raspbian is essentially Linux.
Okay.
And all of those are available. You just have to open up the Software Center and head into that and say, I want to load whatever web browser you like.
So right now I'm using the Chromium web browser, but it seems like it's almost to the point where it's unusable. Like, it's fine for real simple websites, but if I go to more complicated websites, you know, say CNN or New York Times or something like that, it tends to freeze up a lot, and then I have to, you know, just do a hard reboot where I pull out the power.
Right. Well, that part of that, of course, is the fact that you've got a fairly slow computer with very little RAM comparatively.
On a giant media-rich website.
On a very media-rich website.
Right, so I guess I should just give up on running on a Raspberry Pi 3, trying to, you know, really use it as a, you know, kind of a full browser. I mean, it's going to be underpowered for that kind of thing.
Probably.
Yeah.
Well, like we said, it's going to be a slow and somewhat underpowered machine, but for $70, you still get a computer.
You can maybe change your user agent to say you're on a mobile device instead of a desktop device, and then the websites will send you the lighter web page.
Oh, how do you do that?
Right. With most of them, you can you would want to run an add-on. And there's an add-on for Chrome called, I think, Change User Agent. I'm not looking it up right now.
Okay.
But if you search Change User Agent in the store, you can then say, you know, I'm using a mobile browser, and as Steve said, you get the page will look a little different, but you don't care. What the reality is that you get the lighter versions of stuff. You don't necessarily get any of the video ads or any of that nonsense.
Right. All right. Sounds good. Thanks a lot, guys.
Yep. Have fun. Yeah. You have to understand, we talk about this $70 computer. It's a $70 computer.
Yeah.
It's not going to be a $400 computer. It's going to be slower. It's got less RAM, and you need to be more patient. But if you're looking for a toy, if you're looking for a full-blown computer, this ain't it. Go to a Chromebook. If you're looking for a toy, this is the thing you want to play with.
Like educational experience.
It's an educational experience.
You don't mind learning.
Right.
Through, and want a good challenge just to play around.
Right.
That's all it's for, you know. Those folks that are in that mindset, if you're just the type that want to just turn it on and run, no, the Pi is not recommended for you. Go get a Chromebook.
Right. But if you're the Chromebook, like I said, I'm running a Chromebook here. There's nothing I can't do with it. It's fast enough. It's powerful enough. It's got enough RAM to do things fast and conveniently. I can open up. I open up 15, 20 tabs on this thing all the time. CNN runs like a top on this. So those are the kind of things that you can do with a Chromebook. But if you're going to buy a $70 Raspberry Pi, you need to be prepared to be a little patient when you hit some of the feature-rich, media-rich websites that are designed for modern computers running modern browsers.
And not just only that, but just setting it up.
Right.
Again, the time and effort, you're going to have to go through this learning curve to do it. And as long as you don't mind that, then have at it and have fun.
Right. But for you know, those people like Al who called us earlier, immediately started looking for the Kena kit because it's a toy and he likes the toys and he's not afraid to go in and play.
Exactly.
And he knows what he's getting into when he goes in and plays. That's like, I had friends who back in the day wanted to know how you get to be a beta tester. And I said, you do not want to be a beta tester because you don't have the patience and you don't have the technical knowledge to tell them what's wrong when something goes wrong.
Well, like I say, if you can meet it like my criteria, that it gets you so involved that you're staying up past wake-up calls, then you know what? You can be in my league.
That's right.
Because otherwise, you know, you're just playing.
That's exactly
But when
right.
it can suck you in so bad that you lose most into the night, then welcome to my world.
That's right. All right, that music tells us that we are done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to apologize to those to whom we did not get. Please call earlier next week. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve. I'm not going to, but I want to. Right. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. I really want to thank all of you for listening and for calling in. Don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael's here to keep him on the straight and narrow. And we will be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show. That's right. It's Soundbites right here on the Truly Great, and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in just 166 hours. Have fun.